Did we send each other that video of the guy doing karaoke to Tequila?
Yeah.
So good. It's literally instrumental for like 6 minutes and then Tequila. That's the best karaoke song I've ever heard.
Hey dads and non-dads, welcome to the Hey Dad podcast. This is a podcast where three brothers.
Yo.
Hey.
And one guy who wishes he was our brother.
Hey, it's me. Hi.
Stop that noise. I don't know. Was that you arriving via helicopter?
I realized I was going to make a helicopter noise.
And then I went like,
oh man, I don't want to do that.
talk about dad stuff.
Sometimes non-dad stuff.
I'll get a helicopter sound.
We felt like the way dads are portrayed in pop culture didn't really represent us or our friends very well. So we decided to start a podcast to make helicopter sounds really badly and talk about what dad life was really like for us. So apparently I've become that dad that's like annoyed at his kid's teacher, which I never thought I was going to be, but here we are. I'm that dad now. So Gideon's in first grade and he had 2 years of preschool and kindergarten, has always loved school, has always looked forward to it. He's been the kid that's like super excited about school until this year. And the reason for that, at least as best I can tell, is that he has a teacher who expects a group of first graders to act like a group of eighth graders. Like, she has other stuff going on in her life, which she's like sort of like let the rest of the parents in on. And I like feel bad for her for the other things that are going on in her life. But on the flip side, I'm like, hey, what if you stopped taking it out on a bunch of 7-year-olds? That would be cool. What if you found another outlet for those things? And she's instituted this system where at the end of every day, every kid either gets a stamp on their hand, which means good job, or a blue note that she writes down, like, this is what your kid did wrong today, that they're supposed to come hand to their parent.
Oh, boy.
And I've even, like, stood there at the door as the kids line up on the way out, and sometimes even when she's giving a kid a stamp, she's going, like, you're really lucky to get this today because, it, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, like, even in victory, shame. And
that's every day?
Every single day of the year.
Wow.
And so Gideon has developed, and I don't know that it's all related to this, but I definitely think this plays a part in it, a straight up complex about his performance at the end of the day. And we've gotten to the point where we've literally had to like explain to him in so many words, or sometimes in these exact words, like, I don't care about your blue note today. You can throw it away. Like, I don't care. Where I'm fully undermining his teacher and the things that she's trying to do because she's gone so far in this, like, where he's gotten a blue note like 4 days in a row. And the note might be like, while he was waiting in line, a student behind him tickled him and I told them both to stop and Gideon kept laughing. And that's on his note. And then like at the end of the day, the summary of your day is like, you failed today and here's why. And then
you failed because you were ticklish.
Honestly, it's just like such garbage and it makes me so upset.
Why'd you stand in front of a guy who was going to tickle you? I mean, come on.
Should have known. Yeah. Should have known better.
Why'd you get in front of Tickle Jimmy? You shouldn't have stood by him.
Why'd you wear something that tempted Jimmy to tickle you?
How dare you? We're going there.
So anyway, there's like a small part of that where I'm like, all right, this is annoying and this is going to be a phase and like, you're going to get over it and whatever. And I can like sort of on any given day, I can sort of like talk you through it and like try to cheer you up. But when I back up and like look at how Gideon's doing in his life right now, like he's developing some like neuroses and like some habits and mental patterns where I'm just like legitimately worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, you're going to have a different teacher next year, but it's weird now that our kids are getting to the age where I'm starting to wonder like, wait, is this going to be a phase that you go through? And I look back on it and I'm like, I'm glad that's over because that was really hard for you. Or is it going to be like, that was the first glimpse I got into this thing that you're going to struggle with for the rest of your life?
It stuck with you somehow. And it won't be because of that, but it'll be an early indicator of it.
Yeah. And so part of what we're trying to figure out right now is like, how big a deal is this? Like, how seriously do we treat this? Like, are we just managing behavior and like mitigating emotional distress on any given day? Like, am I basically just trying to like help you chill about your blue note? And so it's not that big of a deal slash talk to your teacher about like, hey, can you chill out? Which like those things are happening. Or are we supposed to like be having larger conversations about identity and self-worth and shame and self-talk sure. and like all these other things where I'm like, and it sort of keys in on one of these things, which I think is like a central question of parenting, which is just how big of a deal is this? Mm. Like, I don't want to overreact to this, but I also don't want to underreact to it. And this is the first time I've ever done this. And if I mess you up, you're messed up for life. And like, ugh, mm-hmm. it just like weighs on you.
Oh yeah. Man. And it's like, it's only made more complicated by the fact that it sounds like his teacher's going through a really weird season. So you're also like, I'm care more about my kid than about this teacher's feelings, frankly. And I'm going to like advocate for and talk to this teacher about if I feel like
totally.
She's teaching in a way that's like destructive to my kid. But I also feel bad for her. And I also frankly cannot imagine being a teacher because that sounds like the hardest job in the universe.
Yeah, no, that's a caveat that I feel like is worth mentioning here. Like being a teacher is so hard. I have so much respect for teachers. Like I am pro teacher and like benefit of the doubt to the teacher.
Totally.
It's just, it's been like 5 months now. And I'm like, your expectations of these kids are too high.
Yeah. So there's that dynamic where you're like, hey, if you look at the data, looks like you're disappointed with the majority of your class on the majority of days. To me, that says something about your metric being like needs some calibration. And then it's complicated on the other degree because then you have to do this weird thing where you're introducing this paradigm into Gideon's head where like there's certain adults' opinions that he needs to like discern on his own instead of just implicitly trust, which is like probably been his defining paradigm up until now is like adults are your friends. They want what's best for you. They're gonna, you should listen to them. You have to obey them. And then like what happens when this authority figure is like planting seeds of insecurity, guilt, inadequacy, whatever. Yeah. And he's like, I'm just like, my heart and my mind are just like wide open to like whatever this authority is gonna say.
Yeah.
Because up until my life, that's what I've been told. That's how I've been told to posture myself. I'm not old enough to be like, well, I'm going to take that and I'm going to go away and consider it and like decide if I'm going to let it like roll off my shoulder or put that one on the shelf or like, he doesn't have tools for that yet.
You just hurt my feelings.
And you're an adult and you told me I was bad.
Yeah. And it'd be one thing if it was like, I think this teacher is too hard on math or I think my student should have a B plus and not a B minus or whatever. And I'm just not going to be that dad in general. But when I think about my kids in school now, I have a first grader and a kindergartner. I kind of don't care that whether they're reading in the top quartile of their class or the bottom third of the class or whatever. I mean, I care, but I know how involved I'm going to be in like their lives and making sure that they understand long division or whatever. Like I'm going to be really involved in that and make sure that whatever their potential is, I'm going to do my best to help.
I'm not going to worry about that as like the big thing I should freak out about at this age stage in their development.
But what I am worried about is, do you like school and do you feel like you're good at it? Like that's like a core thing that I want you to know when you're this age, because that informs the way that you're going to approach learning and identity in school for the rest of your life. And when it's not just, so again, just to like pull the curtain back a little bit on why I'm so worried about this, he started doing this thing the last couple months where like, I would say 4 nights a week after the kids go to bed. And it'll be like 20 minutes after their door is closed and their light is off. And I'm like, probably asleep. He'll come out and he'll just like confess something from the day. And the thing he's confessing is so tiny. It's so unimportant. But he's just sitting in his bed, like shame spiraling about like, he's just negative self-talking. And it's just like earlier, you know, the teacher said something and, you know, he was like crying, telling me this the other day. And he's like, under my breath, I said, you're too hard on us.
Oh my God.
And through tears, that's what he's telling me. Or he's telling me about like,
and he feels bad that he said,
he feels terrible.
That
he's just like,
he said, you're too hard on us.
Or he's just like, and it doesn't, I mean, that one's like very, very direct and obvious, but it might just be like a thing that he said to a classmate or a thing that a classmate said to him or whatever. But like he gets
replaying his day.
And, but it's not in the context of like, what a good day I had. It's like, did I do anything wrong today? And that's just breaks my heart. So I'm trying to like bathe him in love and acceptance.
That's hard.
And like, I love you so, so much, but like, it's so hard because there's this other authority figure in his life. And again, I don't want to say it's all this person's fault, cause there's other things going on in his life, you know, whatever kids are weird just because kids are weird. But like, the idea that like I have this like shame spiraling kid like at seven, it's heartbreaking. But then like I also think about, well, what does a shame spiraling 15-year-old say? And what does a shame spiraling 15-year-old do? And like that's when you really start to worry and you go like, oh, what do I do to get ahead of this? Because you see parents that have kids, especially kids that are older than my kids are now, and their kids are really hurting in scary ways and they don't know what to do. And I feel like that when you talk about primal fears as a parent, like that is runs really deep. Like my kid is broken and I don't know what to do.
Oh, geez. That is so tough. Yeah. It's like you said, I mean, I think you're being generous in giving this teacher student dynamic the benefit of the doubt and going, so much of this could be intrinsic personality. There could be other voices contributing to this, whatever. And it's not hard to draw a clear line between like, I mean, it's like a spiritual discipline, like the premise of like a practice or a habit or a whatever, a routine to go at the end of my work day, which like as a student, like school is like someone tells me if I was bad or good. And how I was bad. So I'm building in a rhythm of going five times a week, I reflect or I have placed upon me like a reflection on if I did anything bad enough to be like targeted for it.
So to like be in one of two categories. Good one of kid two or categories. Bad kid.
I was good or I was bad. And like I have to do something with my good and bad. Like, so if I'm bad, I have to go tell my dad I was bad with a blue note. Like, and then he's laying in bed and he's like, I guess I should do that for the rest of my life. I should go like hand my dad like a verbal blue note and be like,
totally,
let me get out of bed and do this thing that I'm being taught to do at school, which is like, I'm going to get ahead of the story and like give you my own blue note of like what I think I did bad today.
Yeah. It sounds like when you guys feel like you blow it, in a parenting moment that, you know, as often as possible, you let Gideon know, you know, hey, we, you know, your parents make mistakes sometimes, but we will let you know we're sorry and we'll ask you to forgive us. I wonder if this is a moment, also like, you know, just with the neuroses of him, you know, waking up, you know, getting out of bed several times in the night to come and confess things, if any of it's school related, to say, I don't know, to have a moment with him where, teaching him to forgive adults in his life. Like he feels like, you know, I screwed up and I, you know, somehow this is my fault and I need to confess some things to you. But if you ever sense in that moment, no, that one was on the teacher. I wonder if he's at the age now, since he's already seeing that, you know, hey, adults can screw up. And when that happens, you know, my mom and dad let me know and I can forgive them in that moment to go, oh, you know what? Also, my teacher needs that sometimes. Sometimes my teacher doesn't make the right call. And before I go to bed with all these things that I'm thinking and feeling that I'm having a hard time, maybe the thing that actually would be cathartic for me is actually to forgive my teacher before I go to sleep and say, you know, and just to go, grown-ups make mistakes and sometimes they don't even know that they made a mistake, but mommy and daddy are going to help you right now and let you know that, yeah, we think that teacher actually made a mistake there. And, before you go to bed, we can forgive her and we can start fresh tomorrow. And so that he doesn't have that blue note hanging over his head that night to go, actually, no, buddy, that's not how I want you going to bed tonight. And that's let me just give you perspective as your dad. This one's not on you. Yeah. And let's just practice forgiving other adults, because you're at the age now and you're starting to have some experiences to realize like adults can blow it. And what do you do when that happens? Well, we can forgive them. We can release that stuff.
This episode of the Hey Dad podcast is brought to you by the Hey Dad Playbox, which we make. The Hey Dad Playbox is our love letter and our life raft to dads. We know that you love quality time with your kids, but for whatever reason, it doesn't happen as often as you'd like. So we dream up these magic moments with dads and kids, and we test them with dads all over the country, and then we ship them right to your doorstep. And it's those moments where everything slows down and you don't feel distracted by your phone or by all the other things you've got to get done today, and you're just fully present with your kid. It's those moments in a box sent straight to you. Like the LOL box, which is seriously just a bunch of pranks that you get to pull on each other and on any other unfortunate member of your house. Silly string booby traps, whoopee cushions, prank calls, and so much more. So go to heydad.com right now and buy Hey Dad for your house or for a dad you love. Use the code HeyDadPodcast to get $10 off your first box. That's heydad.com and use the code HeyDadPodcast for $10 off your first box. And then I think where it gets really scary is when you start to ask yourself, like, oh, there's this thing that my kid's going through, and like it feels like it's a big deal. And then you start to go like, well, what role do I play in this?
Right.
Like, did I cause this? Did I exacerbate this? And in that moment, you're confronted with the amount of control and influence that you have over another human being. And you're like, it just overwhelms you because you're like, wait, but I'm the one. Either it's on me because I did it, or it's on me because I didn't stop it from happening, because I'm supposed to be the one that's protecting you and shepherding you and putting you in the right context. And then the, like, that weight of responsibility, like, it can feel crushing because it's like,
Kev, do you actually feel like those are the only two options?
No, I think in a moment, I think it's tempting to oversimplify into those two options. And I think when you, especially when kids are really little, like, I mean, speaking of things that you worry about, one of the things that my wife and I'm sure like everybody that has kids has like talked about is like, I think when you have kids, you realize that the worst your life could be just got so much worse. Like in the moment you had a kid, because it's like, if something ever happened to this thing, that's my new worst thing that could ever happen to me.
And it was so much worse than before I had this possibility.
Yeah. My highs feel higher, lows feel lower, but there's a very real fear there. And one of the reasons why I think it would be like even harder if something happened to one of the kids than if something happened to me or something that happened to my wife is because it's not just that something happened, it's that I didn't stop it from happening.
Yeah.
And it's my job to protect you. And so what something happens, if I'm there, then it's very obvious. Or even if I'm not there, it's like, but it's my job to protect you. And I put you in that context. And so I do think that that's like a dangerous oversimplification, and it's real easy to develop like a God complex as a parent. So I don't actually think that that's like a good, healthy way to approach it, but it's a very natural and difficult to avoid way to think.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's easy for me on the outside to be like, yeah, but there's just some things you can't control. Like, people are born with pre-existing conditions. People have mental illness. People have, you know, I'm like, you can go to this extreme and go, there are just things, like, for the sake of the argument, there are just things that has nothing to do with my parenting style, or did I love them enough? Did I encourage them enough? They will just always have a struggle and a complex. And I don't know if that's encouraging. Maybe that's even scarier, to be like, there's nothing I could do. Like, there are just some things that, like, I could bat 1,000 on like the parenting, love, affirmation, like giving you everything you need to try to undo this thing, and you're always going to have it. Like, maybe it's just easier and less scary to be like, well, I can do something, so I'm just going to have this God complex. Because it's better to go like, maybe I could like perfect my way in, like, out of this situation for my kid, rather than to accept like there are things that my kid is going to experience and deal with and carry that I can do nothing about.
Yeah, I think the illusion of that, of control, is a little bit of a security blanket. But then the other weird part of it is like, it also is a spectrum where when a kid's like an infant, like, you have almost total control over. Oh, at least over their environment and what they're exposed to. You don't have control over what's in them genetically, or I guess you kind of do too. But like,
you had contribution. I don't know about control.
You contributed, sure.
Yeah.
But then, like, the older they get, you know, that like that shifts and but then it shifts in ways. And I think school's a big milestone where all of a sudden, you know, we've talked about this on previous episodes where like Gideon comes home with like a new fact that he didn't know before. And it's like, well, you wouldn't have ever learned that from me, but I'm not babysitting what you're exposed to all day, every day. So it's hard. Cause like, you're right. There are some things that you just can't control. And I think there should be some peace that you achieve with that. But on the other side, there's never been anything that you had more control over than like this baby, and never been anything that you loved more than this baby. So it's like,
So I think that what, you know, what you're talking about with this teacher, I don't know, there's situations where you can worry about your kid and it's things that are completely out of your control, or, you know, there's something that, you know, just in a split second, something can happen to your kid and you didn't see it coming. There's no way you could have planned for it. But this is one of those situations where, like the system itself sucks and you're just like, I want to get in there and make this right. Cause for all the things that I worry about with my kid that I can't control, that, you know, just come up out of nowhere, this is one of those things where I'm seeing a pattern and it's just stupid. The whole system's stupid. So yeah, I can worry about this, but I actually feel like I can do something about this. I can call the teacher out and just say, this is not working. This is creating unnecessary worry for me. Is I guess just what I'm taking away from all of this. Like I with my 2-year-old, most of the stuff that I worry about for him right now is stuff that comes up out of nowhere, stuff that he has no control over, right, that I don't have any control over. But what I'm hearing and with what you're sharing, you know, that's going to be my life in a few years, where it's maybe some stuff that you could get ahead of and just go, hey, other adult, you know, causing problems in my child's life. This system sucks. Yeah. This is broken. Can we just cut this out? And then there'll be a lot less. Then this just won't even be a thing that I have to worry about.
And the most annoying thing is like, Gideon is a deeply good kid. Mm-hmm. Like I know that about him.
Right. Yeah.
Like my second son, Julian, also a deeply good kid, but like rowdier than Gideon in general. Mm-hmm. Rowdier, more rambunctious, wigglier, etc. And I sort of was expecting there to be issues with him because there was issues with me growing up. And like, I was
in that environment when
that was
like,
a tough environment for me. It'll be a tough environment
for
Julian.
You're very wiggly.
But wiggly guy.
But Gideon, like he's a sweet, friendly person. And so I'm like, if you are crushing him, something is wrong. And
yeah.
And I have no hope for my second kid. Yeah. He's like objectively the kind of kid that's going to have a tough time in the school environment.
You are going to ruin my second one.
Or he's going to ruin you. I think the thing that Gideon is coming to grips with, like when I back up from the situation and look at it, is the older he gets, the more he's going to realize that the world's love and acceptance is performance-based. And you are graded wherever you go on the value that you're bringing to whatever situation and the affection or compensation or promotion or whatever that you're given in that situation, at least theoretically, is based on your performance. And I'm not going to pretend like in our house, there isn't some measure of that. Like, hey, you were good or you weren't good. And that affects the, what you, you know, privileges you get. Like, it's not a completely new concept to him. But he's coming from an environment where acceptance of who he is as a person and love for the type of person that he is unconditional. And I hope that he feels that. And that is the thing that feels normal to him. And then I think what's so jarring for him and the reason why it's like shaking him so much is like at the end of every day, he's basically given a thumbs up or a thumbs down that he has to come communicate to his parent who he's been waiting all day to come see. And then right before he comes out the door, he's like, am I going to have good news or bad news to give to mom or dad?
Yeah.
And that, and I think obviously like on a micro level, that's obviously dumb and is an issue that we're working out with his teacher. But on a macro level, I think what he's coming to grips with is like, everyone doesn't just love me because I'm me. And how do I deal with that?
I think what might be helpful, Kev, for you is if like after every time we record this podcast, we gave you like either a stamp or a blue note to like tell you how if you did a good job, and then maybe you'll like be able to understand a little bit.
I mean,
like I'm doing it for Gideon. We have a voicemail here from a concerned parent wondering if we can help them answer the question that they have, that every parent has, honestly, which is my kid a psycho? Let's listen.
Hey, hey, dad dudes. Just wanted to share another quick story about my two-year-old. He'll be three in February. A couple nights ago, I was reading a bedtime story to him, and he looked up in the middle of the bedtime story, and he said, "Dad, are you afraid of me?" I said, "No, but I'm not afraid of you." Then he had a long pause where he's just staring at me, and he responded with, "Well, you should be."
What?
And then wanted me to continue reading. So that creeped me out a little bit. I've watched enough horror movies to know that my son may be trying to kill me. But then later that night, he woke up and was upset about something and said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Dad, there's extra feet in my bed."
What?
I said, "There's extra feet in your bed? What does that mean?" He said, "Well, find them." And again, I was faced with this moment of, do I actually want to search for these extra feet? Because, yeah, I don't even know what that means. And if there are extra feet in the bed, then that's going to really creep me out. So I acted like I did so, quickly put him back to bed and went back into my room and cried myself to sleep.
Oh, yes, your kid's a psycho.
My.
Yes, your kid's a psycho. That's crazy.
Yeah, we can answer that one real quick and move on.
Well, you should be. Who talks? That's crazy.
I like to imagine that that he's like this moment where he says, like, "Dad, there's feet in my bed." And then at least what I was hearing there is like, I don't want to look because... What if there's feet in your bed?
That's how
like
I would feel.
Like your 2-year-old creeped you out in the middle of the night.
That's exactly how I would feel. I would be like, I'm not going to look because there's not.
What if there were?
Your feet in my bed.
So on that note, I was putting Julian to bed two nights ago. And so one of the things I've been just like saying to the kids before bed, and I'm saying it to both kids, even though it's really just for my older kid, is like, "Hey, I love you so much, and there's nothing you could ever do that would make me not love you or would change the way I feel about you," or whatever. I'm just like trying to reassure him before bed, because bedtime is he like sits there and litigates this whole day in his brain. And so I'm doing that, and my middle son, Julian, who's not dealing with this thing, goes like, "Dad, so like anything I did?" And I'm like, "Yeah, anything." And he's like, "What if I killed someone?" And he kind of looks at me like, and I'm like, "No, I mean, that would be terrible, Julian, but there's nothing you could do that would make me not love you." And then he was laying down and he literally like sits up, turns and looks at me and goes, "What if I killed you?" Anyway, so this is why I want to actually argue that you're not a psycho, because I feel like an indictment of your kid is also an indictment of my kid.
Hearing that story, I was reminded of years ago when I worked at a daycare, and a very sweet kindergartner once asked me out of nowhere, she goes, "Mr. Derek, do you think you're better than me?"
What?
And I was so taken aback. This little girl was so sweet, and she was the sweetest girl. And she just goes, "Mr. Derek, do you think you're better than me?" And it's not like we've been I hadn't been like bragging about anything. She just asked it. And I was so just like, no. But then I was like, kind of lying about that. I mean, obviously. No, but it was just like such a weird adult question to ask, which is the same as, "Are you scared of me?" Well, you should be. I don't think your kid's a psycho for the "are you scared of me" part. That's kind of just a funny thing. But like there are feet in my bed, that gives me pause.
Yeah, totally. All right. So I think we're all in agreement. Your kid's a psycho.
Yeah. I would
that was our first "is my kid a psycho" moment, where all the judges held up a 10 immediately after the routine. If you're like these parents and you are wondering if your kid is a psycho, call our voicemail 415-340-2349 and we'll just tell you straight up. I like to think of myself as a pretty loving guy.
Mm-hmm.
Love a lot of stuff. Like a lot of stuff. There's also a lot of things I hate. You guys know what I hate?
What do you hate, Ty? Tell me.
I hate the little pat that they give you at the end of a massage to let you know that you're done.
Is this a thing?
You know it's coming.
No.
You know it's coming. You're waiting for it. and you're just like, oh, I'm about to get that little double pat. You do like the double pat, and then there's like the really earnest exhale. Okay, Mr. Tyler.
So here's what I'm hearing, Tyler. This is for the bougie section of our audience who just...
Derek, who do you think our listenership is?
I hate that look you get from your butler at the end of the day when, like, you know that he's put in a 14-hour shift and he knows that you know that he's put in a 14-hour shift, but he doesn't need that little, ugh, you know, right when he walks out the door.
I hate, like, with my Tesla, how that special, like, like, suction lock sound it makes when you close the suicide doors, like, you can turn that on or off. And that, to me, just seems like artifice for the sake of artifice.
You know what I hate? I hate when I'm just trying to look up a recipe for a gluten-free quiche and Siri and Alexa both think I'm talking to them. I'm like, get in line. I wasn't talking to you, Siri. This is one's Alexa's.
Do you guys know what I hate?
What do you hate?
I hate people who have based their entire personalities around liking escape rooms. I'm sorry. Loving escape rooms. I got to be clear with you guys. This does not make you interesting. And I say this as someone who has gotten stuck in several small to mid-sized cars and has gotten myself unstuck through the sheer power of my wits. I say this, not impressed. You got out of a room in a strip mall next to a teriyaki place when you want a freaking parade. Get out of here. I hate that.
You guys know what I hate?
What do you hate?
What do you hate, Ange?
So, shirts and tattoos with the words, only God can judge me. But ooh, maybe not for the reason that you think. I hate it because that person has some stories.
Obviously. Yeah, you want to know more about
it. Are they gonna tell you those stories? Mm-hmm. Probably not. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. then you'll judge them and only God can mm-hmm. judge them. But I want to judge you too. So yeah. Can I know? Just me? Just tell me.
You know what I hate?
Tell me.
What?
I hate when people talk to you through your kid. And here's what I mean by that. That moment when it's like, oh, do you need a diaper change? saying to a person that doesn't know how to talk yet.
Okay.
Or like, mm-hmm. oh, did you forget your coat? Oh, did mommy forget your shoes?
You seem and hungry. It's like, did daddy feed you before you? Yeah, I know what you mean.
I hate that. It's like, listen, critique my parenting to my face. There are plenty mm-hmm. of things I did wrong today. I just want you to talk to me about
hey,
it.
Hey, look at me. I know what I did.
I know what I did. Comfortable, up here. Man. My eyes are up here.
Hey, well, that's it for the Hey Dad podcast. But before we go, Tyler, tell us about next time.
Yeah, it should be good. We have Gilbert Godfrey with us to tell us about his spoken word lullaby record. So it should be pretty cool.
Oh, soothing sounds of Iago. All right, that's it for today. I'm Kevin.
I'm Derek.
I'm Andy.
I'm Tyler.
Love you. Bye.